This is Terry Fenneman. Today is July 28th, 2020. I am interviewing Dennis DeRosset, Executive Director of the Nebraska Press Association, for the Community Journalism in Middle America, Challenges and Innovations of COVID-19 Coverage, Oral History Project. So Dennis, why don't you start out telling us how long you've worked in the journalism industry and a little bit about your career.
Okay, thank you, Terry. I have nearly 40 years in journalism and newspapers. I go back to when I really started as a carrier in junior high school, but that's really all I've done throughout my career. I have been fortunate to have been a publisher. First of all, city editor. Editorial is my background. I've been a newspaper publisher, association management at the state and national level. I've also done brokering work, mergers and acquisitions for community newspapers. And so it's really been my entire life. I started, again, in my part-time jobs and working through college, was in a mailroom and delivering newspapers and also doing mailroom work at a daily newspaper.
Which one was that?
That was the Southern Illinoisan newspaper in Carbondale, Illinois. It's a regional newspaper. It was about 35,000 circulation. And so I started off, journalism and communication was not my major when I entered college, but I soon switched after my first year when I realized that that really was what I did, what I know, and writing just seemed to be a natural for me, and I enjoyed it, and it just seemed to be almost an innate passion that I had. At the same time, my university, Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, had a five-day daily newspaper operation on campus, and I was able to work during my college years for a semester, 2.5 semesters actually, as a reporter for that daily newspaper. So in college, I worked at the same time in the mailroom at the Southern Illinoisan, delivering motor routes for the Southern Illinoisan and doing reporting for the Daily Egyptian campus newspaper, Southern Illinois University. And I have to say that that experience at the Daily Egyptian gave me a lot of clips, a lot of experience, and was definitely the factor in me getting my first job out of college. But even at the Southern Illinoisan, I was able to work in circulation. Through the contacts inside the building, I was able to get the Saturday day job for the editorial clerk job, which back in those days was writing obituaries. And we even wrote little, not only personal notes, but also, I'll never forget, we wrote the TV listings. Those were sort of copied out of a TV guide, but we that's what we did at that time. So circulation, later advertising, and editorial, that's been my background since really before college. After college, I was fortunate to get a job actually before I graduated. 2 months before I graduated, I started as city editor of the newspaper in Harrisburg, Illinois. It was a 5,000 daily newspaper owned by two families, the Small family and Seawright family. And the Small family, I'll never forget, great folks. It was Curtis, J.R., John Roy, and Roy, his brother. And it was a good family operation. And they gave me my first opportunity. I was a city editor and really enjoyed it. I did, however, in my young career, move out of journalism into public relations for a hospital. And I did that for 1 year, and that was in the same county there in El Dorado, Illinois. But I quickly found out in that first year that really newspapers and journalism was what I knew and loved. And at the end of that first year, the general manager of the local newspaper in El Dorado, which then was a 2,700 circulation, 5-day daily, actually a 6-day daily, Monday through Saturday. The general manager was retiring, and I had had a good relationship with him, and he recommended that I be hired to replace him, and I was hired. So at age 25, I was given the opportunity to manage my first newspaper. And that progressed to where I actually had quite a long career with that company. It was a privately owned company, American Publishing. There were five families that owned, it was about 12 newspapers. And with that group, I moved then to St. Mary's, Ohio in 1982. And in those years, in the 80s, our company sold to Hollinger, which is a Canadian company. And it stayed as the American Publishing Company. But over the next quite a few years, I was given opportunities to publish newspapers in from St. Mary's, Ohio, then into Missouri. I was based in Rolla, Waynesville, and at one time Boonville, Missouri, and oversaw the acquisitions, actually not the acquisitions, but the startup after the acquisition of many newspapers across Missouri, small newspapers. And then in 1990, our company bought a paper in Beatrice, Nebraska, and I went to be the publisher there and remained there for 7 years until another acquisition in our company. I moved to Enid, Oklahoma, and became publisher of the Enid News and Eagle. And acquisitions were pretty regular at that time, and our company sold, and I was given the opportunity to move back to Illinois and to stay with the company, and I became publisher of both the Effingham Daily News and the Shelbyville Daily Union at the time. And so was there just a couple of years, and as luck would have it, acquisition again came into play. And our paper was sold. And at that time, during part of that process, I became very familiar with Lee Enterprises. And having my hometown and having worked at the Southern Illinois in Carbondale before, that newspaper was owned by Lee. And they hired me to be operations manager. And I took that job hoping that I would be able to move up to publisher pretty quickly. And that happened in just about a year and a half. So in 2002, I was named publisher of the Southern Illinoisan. And that was the newspaper that I worked my way through college at in the mailroom as the editorial clerk and delivering motor routes. And so that's pretty much my the publishing. And then in I was on the board of directors of Press Association, Illinois Press at the time. I'd always been involved in the press associations wherever I was, because I believed in their mission and their assistance to the members. And I was recruited to be a candidate for the director, executive director of the State Press Association, and was hired in February of 2010. To be the executive director of the Illinois Press Association. It was about 450 members located in Springfield, Illinois. And that was a different opportunity, but it was one I really enjoyed a lot. Became very familiar with a lot of different areas, a lot of different press associations. And during that time, we actually, as part of our outgrowth and diversifying our revenue streams, we actually we got the contract, our management contract for the National Newspaper Association. So for nearly 2 years, I was not only executive director of the Illinois Press Association, but also the COO of the National Newspaper Association. And that was a and really enjoyed that. That was a good fit for both organizations, and gained a lot of friends, a lot of experience from across the country. I then moved into consulting for community newspapers and press associations, and started doing some brokerage work with a national merger and acquisition firm, and thought that that was what I would do for the remainder of my career until the opportunity in Nebraska came along. The longtime executive director was retiring, and I thought, enjoyed Nebraska. I had stayed in touch with Nebraska, and would come back every year in the fall for a football game, maintain my friendships and contacts. And so in January of this year, 2020, I became executive director of Nebraska Press Association, replacing Alan Bierman, or I should say succeeding Alan Bierman, because I don't think anybody can replace Alan. But I've now been here 7 months, and it's been rather interesting transition given the COVID situation. It's really, that's made it more challenging, not only from a transition standpoint, but also from a business standpoint. So that is my career in probably a few more minutes than you wanted, but that brings me from the start to where we are today.
And how many newspapers are there in Nebraska?
Right now, about 163 newspapers, all of them, all legal newspapers. And by that, I mean all newspapers that meet the statutory requirement to be a legal newspaper and publish public notices. All of them are members of the Nebraska Press Association. Of the 163, there are about 14 that are daily newspapers. The rest are weekly.
When did you first notice the impact of the pandemic on the industry in Nebraska?
The impact on the industry was really almost, it started in early March, and we started noticing really just from the national impact, the national news, and the impact it was having locally with cancellation of major events. We immediately started seeing cancellation of advertising orders. And not only, from what our members were telling us, but through our own ad placement service that we have here at Nebraska Press, we started receiving cancellation notices. So the fear factor hit pretty hard and pretty quick starting in early March.
Have any newspapers in your state closed as a result of the pandemic?
Fortunately, no. And interesting story, though, because we did have one newspaper that announced that because of COVID and the downturn in business, that it was going to close. And they made the announcement, and we were really, really concerned that that would be the start of a trend, because that was in April of this year. And then, fortunately, a newspaper in a neighboring county stepped up and acquired that newspaper. So it really didn't miss an addition. So we're fortunate to be able to say that, no, we did not lose a newspaper to the COVID pandemic.
And for those listening, we do have a separate oral history addressing this subject with Carrie. But for this oral history, please tell us the name of the newspaper and the buyer.
Yeah, the name of the newspaper was that closed was the Stanton Register. And the family, or the husband and wife team that bought it, Carrie and Wade Pitzer, they own the Antelope County News out of Neely, Nebraska, and they have four or five other newspapers in that area, so they made that acquisition, and we were very, very pleased to see Carrie and Wade step up. it brought home a couple of things. Number one, that the reality is that COVID could cause newspapers to actually close. The announcement by the Stanton owners that they were going to close sort of sent a ripple effect out that, you know, this community, Stanton, is all of a sudden going to really face reality of what it's like to be without a community newspaper. It's not something that they were going to be thinking about. It was something that was going to be there that they were going to be experiencing. And fortunately, that didn't come about when Carrie and Wade Pitzer stepped up to purchase it. But I think it brought reality to the forefront for many people, because many owners were looking at, you know, am I going to be able to stay open? Am I going to be able to, survive through this, however long it takes? And there was a lot of concern and a lot of worry. And that opened a lot of eyes when Stanton made their announcement.
What furloughs or production changes are you aware of in your state?
I do know that some of the major companies, I think it was Lee Enterprises, and at the time, I don't know if the acquisition had been made, whether Lee had acquired BH Media. I know they were had a management contract with them, but there were furloughs at those newspapers. Many newspapers just announced or told us that they were, you know, cutting hours or actually just not using, resources as much as they had in the past. So those were the only real furloughs that I'm aware of. I know in production, there were newspapers that wasn't really related to COVID from a necessity standpoint, but there was one group of newspapers out of Blair, Nebraska, a longtime family-owned group, a very solid group of newspapers. And I think they had been looking at whether they wanted to continue with a printing operation or not. But I think, honestly, they were probably looking at, you know, a business plan 1 or 3 years down the road. But I think COVID brought those decisions more immediate, and they actually closed their printing plant earlier, just a couple of months ago, and now outsource all of their printing. And then we also had another newspaper in West Point, Nebraska, had a small press, printed quite a few small weekly newspapers, and they too decided that now was the time to shutter their press and outsource all their printing. Other production, we've seen newspapers, you know, change frequency, but those are the main ones that stand out.
In some states, reporters were deemed essential workers. Did that come about in Nebraska?
Well, the answer to that, interestingly, is yes and no. Yes, in the fact that we were verbally told by the governor's office that reporters were essential workers, but we could never get it in writing. In fact, it was when we requested it, and the governor's office was very cooperative. But I think two things. Number one, it just either something they didn't feel they needed to put in writing, because then the flurry of requests would come as far as who is essential and who is not. And I think just the overwhelming amount of work going on at the time, that one just didn't rise to the surface. But we were deemed essential in press conferences. The governor's staff repeatedly said it. And our concern was, well, you know, would the deputy that's, you know, out in the rural counties that, you know, whenever this event's going on or that event's going on, how will they know? And we never really got an answer, but that was our concern. But we also understand that, you know, everybody thought their business was essential and their workers would be essential. I think it just obviously, given the basis of, you know, the First Amendment, ours would be. But we never received that declaration in writing, only verbally.
So it's July 2020. What is the state of the pandemic in Nebraska right now?
It seems to have leveled off business-wise, in the fact that I think it reached pretty much a certain depth, and it sort of remained there. The number of cases continues to go up right now in mainly the metro areas. There's just three or four pockets in the state, including Lincoln, Omaha, out in Grand Island area, and then up in I think Cedar County area. Those seem to be hot spots. So the number of cases is going up, but as far as business, the businesses, the state is returning slowly, trying to take steps to return back to some type of opening, safe opening. But we're not hearing anything from our members other than the fact that, the businesses that are still open are there, and those that were closed, they just don't see them opening back up. Many, such as local restaurants, won't come back. But, there's still a fear of what COVID can mean or what it can bring, fear of the unknown, fear of how it might impact them, their staff, their family. From a business perspective, I think everyone's pretty resigned to the fact that, we've reached this depth of decrease, and this is where we're operating for now. We did a survey among our members back in May, excuse me, late April, and the immediate impact was anywhere from a loss of 10% advertising revenue to a loss of, 60 to 70%. So it was a wide range. And we had a couple of newspapers that said they were still ahead year over year, but that was just timing of some of their business and special sections that they were already had advertising commitments for. Again, nothing to report that it's rebounding, but fortunately, it doesn't seem to be sinking any deeper right at the moment.
Newspapers have spent years debating print versus online and, when it's time to give up the print product and go fully online, etc. During the pandemic, you're seeing weekly newspapers use online much more. You're seeing some print papers cut back their print editions. What are you kind of seeing with this trend in Nebraska right now?
I think the trend is that it's made weeklies realize the importance of maintaining news updates between print editions. Many of them have turned to Facebook, updating their web pages, their online editions. Because there was no other place for the local people to turn for local news. If you're out in a out rural county, outstate Nebraska, the TV stations, radio stations, and Lincoln, Omaha newspapers are not reporting on your county, so you don't know what's going on locally unless you go to the local news source. So we saw a lot of newspapers step up, again using Facebook, social media platforms to keep not only news updates, but also, get be, become the sort of the forum for that community, so that everybody was focused on them, their group pages, so that they remain the center of the community news and information. So I didn't see any that, ceased print totally for digital, but you're seeing many weekly owners who would probably have said, it's way off in the distant before we really get into digital. They had to step up and do it because they saw the obligation that they had to their community, and the community turned to them. So I think it also enhanced the relationship. So I think it was good, and the fact that it forced the issue in a lot of areas. And there's still broadband issues, digital divide issues out in rural parts of the state, But I think our community, excuse me, our newspaper stepped up in a just, you know, great ways to be the news, the source of news and information for that community.
How do you see the business model for the industry changing as a result of the pandemic?
Well, I obviously the, you know, digital is where it is all headed. And I think it's just, at what pace will it be in this part of the state versus that part of the state? I do think it will be quite some time before print editions go away completely because, again, part of it's generational. A lot of people still want the printed product. Certain areas just don't have the capacity for, with broadband, to be able to keep up. But again, Facebook, they're starting to utilize that more. Different social medias to communicate with their audiences. And I think it'll continue to move that way. But no question, I think that print circulation will continue to decline. But I think it's, I won't predict when print would go away because I personally can't see that day. I see where in the metro areas, it may be a little more faster road than in the rural areas, but I can't predict when that would be. I wish I knew, but they've been saying that for many, many years. It's just not happened yet. But it's obviously digital is the trend. And if anything, again, papers see the need to, instead of being a once a week news source for their community, they've now realized how to monetize it. Not the best of how to monetize it on social media. But, when things happen, they're immediately putting it up on their Facebook page because they know it's almost an instantaneous news, instantaneous world. Something happens last night at the football game, last night at the basketball game. You want to see it right away. And you don't want to wait until the newspaper comes out, the next edition. And if you don't provide it, somebody else will. So I think there's been a quick learning curve. And they've learned how to, supplement in a good way their print edition with digital.
You've been in the industry for a long time, and you've seen a lot of things. Obviously, nothing you've been through before can really compare to the pandemic. But can you point to other times in history when the industry was disrupted?
Part of it just goes back to not only the change from, the just in technology, because that's had, transformational change. But I think also think I'll never forget, being in the newsroom the morning of 9/11. And, our thoughts immediately went into not updating our webpage, but to producing a special edition, which we did. So I think that, 9/11, from a news standpoint, taught us all a whole lot of thing that, it's a whole new world. I think, news-wise, that was a big change. But technology has had probably the biggest change, and that's, related to the internet also. I mean, information is so fast and free-flowing, and it's just so instantaneous, and it's so voluminous. But it also gives newspapers, I think they have to realize, and most of them do, that, their franchise is local. And with all that information, with all that technology, no one else is providing that local bit of information to that local audience. But there's no question that, technology and major world events have had a huge impact on news and how it's covered and reading habits.
So we've talked about weeklies publishing content online more often, but what are some other innovations that you've seen newspapers in your state do during this time?
Part of the, I guess the main innovations have been with their creative way of either seeking out revenue, new revenue ideas, new sources for revenue. That's something that they had to quickly adapt to because of a loss of business. But, you know, otherwise, you know, production changes, people saying, you know, it makes more sense to, you know, either paginate, outsource pagination, outsource certain functions, rather than try to do it all in-house where they don't have the skills, they don't have the time anymore to do that. But really, it boiled down to revenue sources, platforms that they use to communicate, and again, changes in efficiency for like production needs and those type things.
Can you think of any particular innovations as far as how they've filled their sports pages?
Well, interestingly, we had a lot of calls in the beginning from members saying, you know, what? Because it was like, you know, shock, culture shock. We don't have any news. We don't have anything to cover. What can we, you know, what are story ideas? And I know that there was one newspaper in Central City. They went back and did what I think probably a lot of newspapers did. Instead of covering sports, which were non-existent, they went back and started covering the feature stories from the sports, like going back and looking at, you know, either good athletes from high school in the past, good teams, looking back at, you know, records that were set in high school, who set them, you know, just, I just know that my community, my hometown community, which is a small town, Murfreesboro, Illinois, it lost its newspaper back, it's been at least 5-6 years ago. But one of the feature stories I thought of that would have been great for that newspaper would have been, you know, in the 1940s, it had a football team that was not only undefeated, but it was also unscored upon for the whole year. And so what a time to go back and use your time and resources to, you know, take the historical perspective, do features and things that you never had time to do before, you've always wanted to do. But what about the guy who set the, you know, the record in, you know, say in track or shot, you know, made 60 points in a basketball game, you know, where's he at now? Or the, you know, when girl sports came in, you know, what about the first, you know, first year of those teams, the first coaches, and do stories on what they've seen with the changes. But, you know, those were the type of things that needed to be done as they were there. We just never had time for them. But now that we had time, let's go explore the historical and the feature aspect of our community and its people and its history.
How have you as a state association responded to try to help your newspapers?
We, you know, our mission is strictly to serve our members and not only from an advocacy legislative standpoint, but from ad placement. We sell and place ads in those newspapers, but also to try to generate ideas, feed content and ideas their way. And one of the things that we did immediately was there was just so much information out there, and it was coming from all these sources. We used to have a bulletin that went out every week, every 2 weeks. And we started doing a daily email blast of all these stories, some COVID related, some just industry related, some idea related, and package them in a daily email blast that members could expect every day at that time. Rather than, you know, send out 20 emails a day, we just put it in one package and send it out every day. It was, you know, the information was just so, voluminous. It was amazing. But we were always looking for good ideas to pass on to members, how they could do this, how they could do that, what to watch out for. When the payroll protection program came out, we, you know, blasted that to our members as often as we could. Advice, not instructions, but advice on where to go, how, you know, where they need to be calling to try to participate in those funds. Because we knew it would be the determining factor whether some of the newspapers stayed open or not. So we would just try to be, you know, glean information, sift out what we thought was really not the most important. And, but we also knew they were busy and frantic trying to cope. So give them as much as we could give them, but not overwhelm them. But whatever we did give them, make sure it was as useful as possible. That was probably the most important thing we did. Again, we also, many of them, we also provide the counsel. Many of them thinking, okay, well, I may not have enough revenue. Do I need to keep putting out a newspaper every week? Can I go to, you know, every other week? Can I go to, you know, three times a month? So we had to, I guess, re-educate our members about here's what the state statutes require for you to maintain your status as a legal newspaper. And in Nebraska, you have to publish 52 weeks a year. Not all states have that. Some states it's 50. And 50 would be better because it would give newspapers a break either at the holiday for vacation or mid-year for vacation. But in case of an emergency or whatever, they would have a break that was covered by statute. We don't have that. So we talked about how essential it was to maintain 52 weeks, to maintain the 4-page minimum, those things that would keep them legal, and coach them through and work with them so that they didn't make a short-term decision that had some negative long-term consequences.
Do you plan to go to the next legislative session and discuss that?
I think, you know, part of anyone's legislative strategy has to be being careful at being, even when you go with something necessary, you have to be careful because in the legislative process, you can go in with that one item to change frequency from 52 to 50 weeks. And all of a sudden, it opens up areas of the statute that might not be good. So you have to be so cautious and really, you know, make sure that whatever you go for, it's got to be worth the fight. And, you know, build your coalitions, get everything covered before you do those type things. So we have no plans right now to have any offensive strategy next year. In fact, if I would have to say today, given the state of the economy, given the state of the reduced tax receipts that the states, cities, states, counties have experienced, we might find ourselves just out of necessity maintaining a defensive strategy. That may be what we see, just trying to maintain what we have, fighting, you know, any bad public notice legislation, any. You know, and one thing that just came up that we just did, we just worked with the Nebraska League of Municipalities. You know, there's been a lot of concern in with some small rural areas, and it doesn't have to be small rural, but that's where the idea came from, is that, you know, a lot of older people who were afraid to come to a meeting, their elected official, but they didn't want to be around a group of people. They didn't want to be in a small room, but they still want to be a part of the process. So we worked with the league and the officials, the county officials, so that through, you know, video conferencing, teleconferencing, that nothing was lost as far as open meetings, but it just gave other avenues for conducting that meeting in public, but on different platforms, that still allowed for the, not only the safety of the elected officials, not only because of age, but also health condition, But in many instances, that also provided for the safety of the reporter, who may not want to be, you know, one person in a room of 25 that should only be holding, you know, five. The public business still had to be transacted. We still needed to do our job to cover it. But how can we use technology to make it compliant with the statutes, safe for everybody? Business still gets transacted. How can we do that? And, you know, that's the project we just worked on. That is not being introduced right now. Possibility it could be because we're in a end of an emergency session with our legislature. And so you could see that come up. There's no guarantee it will, but that's something that we've been proactive on.
So throughout this project, we're also visiting with other state newspaper association directors. How much have you guys been calling each other and relying on each other during this time?
I would say a lot. The Newspaper Association Manager Group, which is called NAM, is a very close group. And, you know, the many days the NAM listserv just, I mean, it just is heated. I know in the very early stages of the COVID, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, what's the legislation in your state about this? And are you experiencing this as far as open records, open meetings, courts, a lot of interaction. And if you have a question, you know, you just, your NAM group is where you can go. And I have to say that probably each NAMer has a group of probably 5, 6, or 7 that I call, you know, their inner circle. So, and I do. And when that happens, I have a question, I'll just call or email really one of those 6. And I know I can always get answer, advice, insight, that type thing. So we're all in this together. There's only, you know, so our state press associations, you know, there's only, I'm not going to say only 50 because some are regional and some you have 2 in each state. So I'm not sure of the total number, but it is a close working network and we really feed off each other and help each other.
So we've talked about some of these things already, but how do you think the pandemic is changing journalism as an industry?
I think, well, 2 things. First of all, I think that, you know, I've always been hesitant to paint journalism or media with one brush because, you know, and so I'll go with the national brush and then the community level brush. COVID has caused a lot of changes in our society. And, you know, some may be good, some may be not so good. And it's also, you know, disrupted lives, brought everything to a different realization. Always said it's kind of like God hit the pause button and brought everything to a quick halt. And so, but the coverages, you know, from the national media, and I think the coverages from the local media, really 2 different things. And at the community level, you know, they have done a really good job with maintaining close contacts, close coverages. I think in many instances, in a lot of instances, that the relationship between the community and the local newspaper is probably even stronger because they realize they need each other, they depend on each other, and I think that's been good. I don't think the same is on national media because, first of all, there's so many platforms now and so many different. You can again with the word journalist, you've got a pretty broad brush there, and so it's. The news literacy level has declined at the national level. and that's unfortunate because I think, you know, people hear quick sound bites here and there, quick reads here and there, and they form opinions based on that. And so I think news literacy is a huge issue for us as a country. And so that's how I would divide it. But I think that's the impact it's had, that the trust level, I think, has gone down at the national level. And again, no, not saying print, broadcast, whatever, just all national media in one brush. There's a lot of change and a lot of news out there, a lot of information out there. Not all of it's correct. Not all of it's factual. And, you know, I think we've gotten away from the days of, you know, journalism used to be, it was taught to me, everything has to be, you know, fair, accurate, complete, and responsible. And everything you do, fair, accurate, complete, and responsible. And, you know, I think a lot of, quote, information sources, media sources that may have gotten away from that. But I also think that the average consumer of news doesn't demand that of their information source, nor when, you know, of themselves. They don't take time to discern where they're getting that news, what the source may be, is it factual, is it not? And again, decisions are made on sometimes wrong information. And so I think it's been an interesting time for journalism, but community journalism has been my life. And that's where I try to focus my efforts, because I think we can make a difference at the community level. And I think we do. And I feel pretty good that in many ways I see a newfound cooperation and respect between the newspaper and the community and vice versa.
How has the pandemic influenced you personally?
Well, I have to personally, just because of, you know, health issues, I have to be very, very careful. I have to, you know, because of my transition from Illinois to here, it personally has delayed me being able to, you know, sell my home and move my family here to Nebraska. So I'm sort of, you know, split between Nebraska and Illinois. So it's impacted me personally as far as, you know, ability to sell a house and move. And, you know, just even, you know, the health situations with relatives, you know, it's caused the, what I call the distancing, which is really strange. You know, when you know, you don't hug your mother for 7 months, you can talk to her, you know, and I guess I'm fortunate than many people. I know that. And I still have the opportunity to hug my mother, but I've not been able to do that right now. And that's just different. We had, you know, a couple of personal family trips planned and that was canceled. But you know, that's, In the short, it's kind of, I guess, that's not the most important thing. I think more than anything, it's caused us to sit back and look at, you know, wait a minute, our lives, they were really swirling, fast paced, and maybe we weren't paying attention to the right things. Maybe our priorities weren't in the right place. So I think this sudden pause has given a lot of people sort of a chance to relook at their priorities and realize that, you know, even going forward after COVID, whenever that happens, I think you'll see people do things a little bit differently than they had in the past. Some of that will be good, some past. I think there'll be more people who are more cautious about certain things. Many instances that'll be good, many instances it may not. But it's affected me in just, you know, a lot of ways. But same way here, even in the first, I started in first week of January. And by the middle of March, everything was grinding to a halt. We started working remotely April 1st. So I had 3 months to, you know, work with the group of employees here. Much of that time, I was actually away at the Capitol because of the legislative session. So all of a sudden, you know, I'm working with a new group of people on a remote basis, and I haven't had a chance to, you know, really get to know them, really get to learn the processes, the procedures, the things that we do at Nebraska Press. So it's extended that what I would call a normal transition. Now we're looking at, you know, when would we be able to come back to work and catch up? But I don't think you can catch up. It'll be a while before we get to do that. But from a job perspective, it's caused a difference in the transition, and probably in a difference in the way we, you know, we actually carried out our work. We had to cancel our convention this year. We had to cancel our Hall of Fame banquet, which is scheduled for October. I've not been able to go out and meet very many members. In fact, I had a board meeting in February and May, and just last week on the 23rd of July. The February meeting was already scheduled for a video conference, or excuse me, a teleconference. May was at convention, or scheduled for convention, and July was a summer meeting. And all of those had to be by video conference. So other than a handful of my board members, you know, I've actually not met them. I met some during the interview process. And again, many I've known over the years, but many I've never met. And here I am 7 months into the job. So thank goodness for video conferencing. And, you know, it's a new way to communicate, but it definitely changes our world.
What changes to newspaper operations during the pandemic do you expect will continue after it's over?
I think people have to really look at depending more and more on technology. Finding skill sets, or first of all, finding people, but people with the skill sets, and I would say the same hunger or passion to work at and produce community newspapers is going to be difficult. So you're going to have to, you know, do more with fewer people. And to accommodate that, you need to let technology do a lot of the work. So I think technology is going to be huge. I think they're going to have to look for different revenue sources, operate on different platforms, and not just be a, you know, weekly newspaper, but, you know, they're the local news company and news and information company, and they're going to have to realize that. I think there'll be a lot of, I think it'd be a prime time for a lot of people who are looking to get out of the business, who'll say, it's time for me to do this. I need to just sell and move on. And that presents another challenge because, you know, finding the next generation of owners is a major issue that we're going to be facing. We're facing it right now. And it's something that, you know, I'm sure in many areas we'll be struggling with it because, you know, many are small communities, no revenue base, and you're not going to find people who want to move there and buy that because they won't be able to make a living, especially if they have much debt in acquiring the newspaper. So do you have anyone local that would take it over, or any local organization that'll take it over? Those are questions that are going to face a lot of communities, and all of that poses a whole new, you know, set of issues when it comes into, you know, news and information, and getting it, and local people getting their local news and information. Where are they going to get it if the local newspaper is not there? And how do we maintain that? So we're gearing up to, you know, really look at that as a major project for us, because with lack of revenue, retiring ownership, it could turn into a situation where you have newspapers close because of not only no revenue, but no buyer, no one to take it over. You might see some regionalization of those products, such as what Kerry and Wade Pitzer have done, that won't be possible in all parts of the state, but I think you'll see more of that.
How has the pandemic influenced your views of the role of journalism in society?
I think, again, going back to the two levels, the national level and then the local level, it just reinforces my belief that community newspapers play such an important role in serving their local community and region, and that it's not just a it's not just a business, it's a partnership with that region, and it's an obligation to that region. And so I think I see that as more and more important on a national level. I think it's going to continue to spiral, and I don't like the direction that it's going. And I don't know that that direction can change, because again, everything is, you know, more and more, not only more and more just to be, you know, on the number of platforms, but just, again, just the fact that information is so voluminous, so free flowing, and there's no checks and balances many places. And those things shape our country and they shape our agendas. And, again, news literacy is so important, and I think it's something we really need to take a look at all levels. But that's a concern I have at the national level, but much stronger belief in our purpose and our mission at the local level. Now we just have to figure out how to make sure we're there to do that.
What do you want readers to know about journalism right now?
Journalism makes a big difference in their lives, because we being the journalists, community newspaper industry, we're the ones that are, you know, we still serve the watchdog role on government. And that's an important role that should never be dismissed or overlooked. You know, government cannot report on itself. An unchecked government goes a lot of times in the wrong direction. And so it's up to newspapers, journalists, to provide that check and balance in the system. And so, the First Amendment was written and included the free press for a reason. And I think we need to, you know, just again, realize that not only is it good to know that you have a recorded history of the people and of your community, but it plays a role in your life because you're paying tax money. And whether it's the council, the school board, the township, the road district, the cemetery district, you name it, those folks are doing things with tax dollars and shaping your life, impacting your life. And those are important things that you have to stay on top of. But news is news and information is critical to have. And you make decisions based on that. And you need to just be as informed, as well informed as you can to make those good decisions. And a lot of times that's information from your local newspaper and local journalists.
What do you want journalists 100 years from now who may be covering a new pandemic? What do you want them to know?
That what they do is important. And because if they're still here 100 years from now, if they're still a democracy and they're still journalists, then obviously the track record of the role of journalists in a democracy has played out and survived. And they will see that. But their job will be to continue that on to the next generation by being, you know, fair, accurate, complete, and responsible in what they do. And, you know, it's that, again, it's not about agendas. It's not about, you know, what you want. I mean, there's opinion and there's a place for that. But, you know, you serve a role as a watchdog on democracy, on our government, elected officials. And that role is just so important, because if you're not there to do it, and if you don't do it right, who will? And there's plenty of examples to look back on and see where either there was no watchdog effort, there was no newspaper, or newspaper or media source didn't do its job. It's evident what the outcome would be, and it's not a good outcome. So what they do is important and critical to a democracy.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Oh, I have no prepared comments, so I think you've done a very good job of covering the spectrum of the questions. I applaud you for doing this oral history because I think it's important to have this recorded history of it, and hopefully when people look back, they'll see that, you know, every day in so many communities across the in this case, Nebraska, but whatever state they're in, you know, you got a lot of dedicated people who are in it not to make a lot of money, but because they believe that what they do matters in the lives of the readers, and it impacts, you know, the local community. I was in economic development for many years. As part of my role as a publisher, I was always involved in economic development because, you know, our newspaper, the revenue came from that region. If the economic base was not strong, we would not survive as a newspaper. And so, you know, always let people know that, you know, you've got to, you know, make sure that you not necessarily promote your community because you have to cover the news, but you wear two hats. You're the journalist. You provide the objective news reporting. But if you're a local publisher and you're not promoting your region or your community, I don't know that you understand the full scope of what it is that you do, because you can do both and do them properly, and they complement each other. But a newspaper plays a key role in its community in a lot of ways, not just with news.
Okay, this is the conclusion of this oral history.